Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Well, welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. This is Joe Covelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. I'd also like to bring into our program Larry Knuth, Dan Williams, and our guest today is Dana Seckler. Hello, and welcome to EMS Live.
Good morning.
Morning, Joe.
There's Larry. Okay, and Dana?
Well, you told him to mute his phone.
I did tell him to mute his phone, and I think he took me way too seriously. You know, I've never heard Dana be so quiet in my life.
Yeah,
Dana,
true.
I hope you're with us. Well, I think I'll have to call him back here, and we'll get him. He's still on for some reason, but just muted. Dana, I will call you back. I wanted to give time to Dan Williams here to update us all on the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin Conference. It's coming up here September 20, 21, and 22. So, Dan, why don't you go ahead and give us a tee-up of what you have planned for the conference, and I'll get Dana back on the phone.
Okay. Well, the conference again this year is September 20th, 21st, and 22nd. It's held at the Tundra Lodge in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It's our 30th annual conference, which is, I think, pretty impressive as far as a longevity standpoint goes. We'll see how many more we do, but I'm up and ready to do a few more, I guess. So I think that's something that people have asked to continue, so we'll do it as long as we can. The agenda is pretty close to being set. I have, like, I think one, maybe two spots yet to fill. If anybody, this is kind of the last call. If anybody has any specific topic that they want to have covered, this would be the last call to get that to me. And my email address is dan@psow.org. So we're still looking for a couple of good topics. I think topics we have are excellent, but you can never have too many good topics. So we're looking forward to the conference this year. And I hope we have a lot of fun. The one thing I've been really excited about is this year I've seen a lot of new names and new services that have already signed up to come to the conference. That's really, you know, I believe that's a beautiful thing, because we've wanted to have that reach out to more services over the years, and we just haven't been able to for some reason. But now I would have to say, out of the registrations I have so far, there's at least 10 new services that have come on board this year. So happy to see that for sure.
Dan, thank you very much for that update. And we do have Dana Seckler back with us. Dana, that was the quietest I've ever heard you in 20 years.
Good
that I've
morning.
Known
yes, I technology won out on that one, didn't it?
Well,
man, oh man.
Well, it's great to have you back with us. Say, also today, we'd like to make a special announcement today, actually, to 27 individuals. As you may or may not know, the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin has produced the Stars of Life program here in Wisconsin since 2006. It's really been our honor to produce this program and recognize the dedication, professionalism, and just the good-hearted, excellent work that EMTs, paramedics, and other ambulance professionals and communities alike through community involvement have done with their local ambulance service. And so this morning we are going to be pleased to announce the 2017 Wisconsin Stars of Life honorees. Now, keep in mind, each person nominated for this prestigious program is presented with Stars of Life honors. The nomination actually comes from the local ambulance service, and then one person from the group will advance to the National Stars of Life program in Washington, D.C. That'll be in June of 2018. But it's really our privilege and pleasure to announce this morning the class or participants or honorees for 2017. So Larry's going to start us off, and we'll go one by one with the person's first and last name and then the entity or ambulance service that nominated them. So, Larry, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
By all means, Joe. First nominee, nominated by County Rescue Services, Tammy Eritz. Second nominee, nominated by Gold Cross Ambulance, Chris Cuddy. Third nominee, Valders Ambulance, Christopher Dallas. Fourth nominee, Bell Ambulance, nominated Patrick Donahue. Fifth nominee, by Paratic Ambulance Service, Elizabeth Ferger Olson. Sixth nominee, by Palmyra Public Safety Department, Angela Gonzalez. And the seventh nominee, by Flight for Life, John Hagan.
Okay, the next one from Ryan Brothers Ambulance is Paul Harrison. Then a nominee from Tri-State Ambulance, Stephen Hensley. And then from Orange Cross Ambulance, Amanda Holtz. From Bell Ambulance, Ryan Janice. From Baraboo EMS, Bob Kelter. From Grant EMS, David Krieger. And from Riverside Fire District, Mary Laporte.
Okay, and then the next seven names that I have from Valders Ambulance, they nominated Dr. Suzanne Martins, who is the state EMS medical director. From Cambria Community Ambulance Service, they nominated Lori McConachi. Paratech Ambulance Service, David Mike. Tri-State Ambulance nominated Tyler Miller. Tri-State Regional Ambulance nominated Kenny Monteith. Ellsworth Area Ambulance nominated Dan Morth. And Ryan Brothers Ambulance nominated Tom Posh.
Then I have the final set of nominees going from Lodi Area EMS, Russell Schaefer. Tri-State Regional Ambulance nominated Jerry Schiffman. The Pickerel Rescue Squad nominated Sandra Stenwig. Divine Savior Healthcare EMS nominated Benjamin Waldera. Paratech Ambulance Service nominated Robert Witten. And lastly but not least, Baraboo EMS nominated Mark Willer.
Okay, very good. Thank you for reading all those names. And our congratulations to our 2017 Wisconsin Stars of Life. The statewide event recognizes emergency medical practitioners or those involved in EMS for their high-level contributions, volunteerism, and professionalism. The dinner and awards program will be in Green Bay at the Tundra Lodge on September 21. It is a part of the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin conference that Dan just mentioned here at the top of the program. And this, again, is the dinner and awards program. We'll also have an event at the state capitol in Madison sometime in October or November, where each of the stars is recognized by the Senate and Assembly. And last time we did this 2 years ago, Governor Walker provided us time in his office to meet individual stars and their families and friends and coworkers that came with. It was a very nice event. As I mentioned, the Stars of Life is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's modeled after the American Ambulance Association National Stars of Life program. We'd also like to acknowledge our sponsors, which include gold sponsors EMS Medical Billing. Silver sponsors include Zoll, Savick Buying Group, Godfrey and Kahn Law Offices, JMB Medical. Our bronze sponsors include Jefferson Fire and Safety, the Stark Collection Agency, and Boundary Medical. And, of course, in-kind support is provided by the Paramedic Systems of Wisconsin Conference and Frederick and Medical College of Wisconsin. For more information and a list of the names, they will be posted on the PAW website at paaw.us here in about another hour or so. Now we'd like to transition here in just a little bit to our program. On August 2nd, Dana Seckler, who's our guest today and is also the EMS director at Baraboo District Ambulance and a PAW Board of Directors member, was asked to testify on three recent legislative bills. The public hearing was held with the Committee on Health for the Assembly at the State Capitol in Madison just a few days ago. And so Dana is going to provide an update for us on the public hearing and kind of where we're at on all the bills. Before we proceed, I want to get into a brief message to you. Gentlemen, have you ever attended the EMS World Conference by chance?
This is Dan. Yeah, I've attended numerous times. Not recently, however.
Not recently. Okay. And I do remember I remember seeing you at the one about 10 years ago. That's right, Dan. We did see each other then. Okay. Well, they sent us some information, and Paul was has done an arrangement with them to get some tickets and some discounts for those in EMS here in Wisconsin. So I did want to share a message with you that you can join thousands of EMS professionals at the largest EMS conference and trade show in North America. The conference is October 16 to 20 in Las Vegas. And like I just mentioned, Paul partnered with EMS World Expo to provide our members and those in EMS here in Wisconsin with a $100 discount on the three-day conference pass, and any free the exhibit hall passes are all free. All you need to do is use the promo code PAW, P-A-A-W, when registering at emsworld.com. Again, use the promo code P-A-A-W when registering for the conference, and you will be all set. Our program continues here in just a minute. We've got a brief commercial break. You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin.
EMS Medical Billing Associates provides complete fire and EMS billing for service calls, alarms, and data management. EMS Medical Billing Associates, experienced, professional, accurate. Find them on the web at emsmedicalbilling.com.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli. I'm joined by Larry Knuth, Dan Williams. Our guest today is Dana Seckler. Dana, I know you have been testifying quite frequently lately at the state capitol. There's a lot of things happening in the world of EMS with the legislation and bills, and the governor recently signed a bill into law a few months ago regarding name changes for all the levels, for the most part, with emergency medical services and practitioners. But recently there's been three bills that you testified on at the state capitol, Assembly Bill 310, 311, and 356. How about if we maybe just start out with an overview of your testimony, and then we can get into details on the specifics with the time that we have, about 20 minutes.
Okay. Good morning, Joe. Thanks for inviting me. And, yes, it's been a very interesting and exciting time for EMS, and I do want to start at that 50,000-foot view just for a moment or two and say that I'm not aware of any time in the past in Wisconsin history that we've had so many bills coming through for EMS, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and we're going to have some potentially differences of opinions on where we land on some of them. We might want to, you know, tweak something here, tweak something there, but we are finally getting our name as far as EMS out into the public. And even when I testified most recently, I said, I look forward to this opportunity to educate people that we're more than just ambulance drivers and paramedics. There's a whole level in between, and there's a huge facet to EMS. It's not just, you know, what you perceive as the person responding to an emergency call. You know, we're based in the fire departments. We're based at the hospitals. There's private ambulance services. There's various levels of EMS within, as far as I-99s and I-12s and AEMTs and the old I-85s and EMRs. So it's been a very great experience. And I want to say as well, up until very recently, several bills were passed with very little input from EMS to the legislators. And that was disappointing because there were so many things we could have done to really have a well-rounded bill. But I will say we now have legislators contacting various people within EMS to say, hey, we're in the process of writing this bill. What do you think? How can we help? Was this good? Is this not so good? What can we do to tweak the law or for the intent of what we're doing? And this is mostly coming to fruition because of the legislative study committee that happened last year. It was a group that was established by the legislators, and they picked different topics every year. It happened to be the decline of volunteerism in both fire and EMS, and they were taking testimony from across the state on how they can help as a, with legislation to maintain volunteerism in fire and EMS across the state of Wisconsin. Many ideas came forth. Dr. Birnbaum testified. Dan Williams, who's on today, testified, as they had testified 20 years earlier. They even said we took our testimony from 20 years ago, dusted it off, and you know, realized we have almost the same issues that we do now as we did 20 years ago, and maybe hopefully this is the time that we can resolve some of that. So we have three legislative pieces to discuss today, and I'll tell you, there's more coming down the road. They're still going to keep discussing ways that they can work on legislation to help EMS in Wisconsin, and I think we're going to see a number more coming through towards the end of this year and into next year. And we still have we didn't talk about community farm medicine, but that bill passed the Assembly 99-0, and currently it's over at the Senate side in the committee, waiting for them to bring it out to get voted on there. So, yes,
all right,
exciting
Dan.
Time well, for all that.
It is. It is a real exciting time. Let's talk about the first one, Assembly Bill 310, relating to funding for first responder and emergency medical technician training and certification and making an appropriation.
Yeah, this one helps to round out what the FAP funding is all about. Currently, it only is used for training, education, and unintended expenses at the EMT basic, the AEMT, I-99, or paramedic levels. Assembly Bill 310 does two things. The first one is it expands out the funding to also include emergency medical responder groups. So those that have established licensed EMRs across the state would be then eligible to apply for the FAP funding, just like the rest of the transporting ambulance services do in Wisconsin. So the first issue is it would actually expand that out. The second part of it allows for those services that do receive it currently that maybe don't use all of it on the EMT basic training in the first year to then be able to escrow some of that money into the following year so that they can use it on the odd years or the even years to send people to conferences or to use it for training at higher than the EMT basic level, which is what it's earmarked for at this point in time. So we testified on it last week. I think everybody was supportive of it in the audience as well as those that were testifying. We said that obviously if you have the same pot of money and you're divvying it up amongst more people, that those that are currently receiving the grant will probably receive a little less in future years, but everybody was in agreement that it's that important to have funding for the EMR groups out there and to let them share in the pot of money that's there. However, we also planted the seed that said, if you're currently using the funding source as is, it's at $1.95 million, you're short what the original amount was from when it was first established, and that's at $2.2 million. So we did plant the seed to say it sure would be nice if somehow that funding could be reestablished back to the $2.2 million and include the EMRs, and most people won't see a decrease in the grant for future years if this bill gets passed.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the overview on that and the details. Dan or Larry, feel free to jump in, too, at any point here if you have a question or want to offer a comment. Okay. Dana, let's take on the next one then, or discuss the next one, I should say, Assembly Bill 311 relating to upgrading service levels for ambulance services in rural areas. I know that's kind of a generic introduction to it, and there's a lot more to it.
Yeah. This one certainly has a lot of people talking. It's a very unique bill. It kind of looked at what other states are doing, and other states have what they call flexible staffing. In essence, what this would allow is that a current entity that's either at the basic or AEMT level, if they're in a population area that's less than 10,000, they would then be able to submit an operational plan to the state that says that we anticipate we're only going to be at the basic or AEMT level, you know, 24 hours a day. We know that's the minimum staffing that we can do for the entire year. However, we have the opportunity in which people live in our community that work elsewhere, or maybe people are coming in to vacation in our community that are at a higher level of EMS. Maybe they're at AEMT or I-99 or I-12 or paramedic level. And so what it would do is allow the state to review the operational plan and say, yes, we see that you've met the parameters of this, 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 and this, and it would be the same parameters as any other service that's licensed to an I-99 or paramedic level. And if approved, it would then allow the entity to hire people on or have volunteers come in that are at the higher levels, and then those paramedics or I-99s or AEMTs could then practice to their license level, even though the ambulance service itself was still only licensed at the basic level. Again, we see that other states have done similar types of models. When I testified, I did share that I felt that the bill was written backwards, so to speak. And the reason why I said that was you're allowing any entity that's at the basic level to bump up to a higher level for a time period, whether it's one shift or one day or one week, and then when that higher level of EMS person is not available, it would drop back down to their original level. I said most states have it so that you are licensed to the highest level that you perceive you're going to be able to provide service to. So you would actually license to the paramedic level, and that includes, you know, making sure that you have medical direction, making sure that you have protocols to the highest level, making sure you have the equipment in place, making sure all the security is there for your narcotics and dealing with all the compliance issues with the DEA and so on. And then that's what you would have as your gold standard. On the days that you didn't have a paramedic or I-99, you would then drop down to the lower level for the rest of the duration until you had another paramedic or I-99 available to be on staff. So this one is a very interesting one. It does allow for the flexible staffing, which has been one of the problems. People were saying in the testimony that we can't get a paramedic to come to our area because a paramedic is used to practicing at the paramedic level. And it's very difficult for them to come into this other area, to, you know, whether they're volunteer or paid, into another service and have to kind of curtail their skills because the ambulance service is only operating at the basic level. And they see this as a solution where that person might be more willing to come and volunteer because they would then be able to exercise their skill level to their license level. On the surface, we certainly see where this can be beneficial. However, I will tell you that in the weeks prior to this, we had a number of stakeholder groups get together, and that was representatives from PAW, representatives from WMSA, representatives from the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, and representatives from the Professional Firefighters Association, and also representatives from the EMS Advisory Board. And as we began working through all the details of this, we realized that there was some issues as far as the operations that would be in the way the bill is currently written. So we actually proposed an amendment to this bill and said that we would support the bill if we could add in the amendment that the flexible staffing would be capped at the AEMT level. So basically, if you have a basic service, that basic service could bump up to the AEMT level when there was an AEMT available, and when they didn't have an AEMT, then they would go back to the basic level. We proposed that. The original author of this bill felt it was an okay proposal and was in initial agreement to it. However, when we went for the day of testimony, they decided that they were not going to include that amendment into the bill at this point in time. it was nonetheless discussed, and we did bring it up as amendment anyways to the rest of the group, and saying that the stakeholder groups would indeed support this bill if we could add in the amendment that would cap the flexible staffing to the AEMT level. And at that point, we can evaluate it, take a look and see how it's implemented out in the field and implemented across Wisconsin. And then from there, we can take the stepping stone approach to see where it can go in the future, and just make sure that there's controlled, regulated growth, and that people don't get in too deep on a good idea. And we just, you know, a slow process to continue to expand EMS in Wisconsin.
Right. Excellent points, Dana. And there are some things to evaluate with that, compliance, controlled narcotics, those types of things. I mean, there's a lot that goes with it, especially when you get to the higher levels of care and some of the requirements to manage that level of care with equipment and controlled narcotics. Larry or Dan, did you have anything that you'd like to offer on this as well? Bill 311?
Yeah, this is Dan. I do have a few questions and comments, I guess. I'm trying to figure out how a basic service would be able to do this at the paramedic level for sure. And as long as they had said they weren't going to support the amendment, it appears as though that could happen. You know, it's, who's going to supply the drugs and what's the security, and who's going to be the paramedic medical director for a basic service that doesn't currently have a paramedic medical director? You know, all of the supplies that a paramedic is going to need, you know, approved protocols. Dana, you mentioned several of these things as points that you tried to bring up, but boy, I just don't see how you could pull this off with any degree of success without having these things in place, and I'm not sure how you could put these things in place even.
That was certainly some of the testimony, Dan, from the groups that were representative at the hearing. Everything would have to be written out in the rule. You know, DHS, the Office of EMS that sits in DHS, would have to, I guess, amend or add to their current rules and regulations this whole gamut. And as I said, if they're going to give a license for a level to be at a higher level, and let's just say to the paramedic level, they're going to have to adhere to the same standards that any other paramedic ambulance service is going to adhere to. They're going to have a medical director that's willing to sign his name to the DEA 222 forms. They're going to have a medical director work with them proactively to create the protocols for paramedic level care. And of course, then there's the cost associated with the additional equipment. I mean, there is a lot of additional costs. You have 12 lead EKG and heart monitors that, you know, range between $25,000 and $35,000. You have intubation equipment. You have IV fluids and start kits, and then the medications associated with it. So there's going to be a cost involved as well. Again, this proposed bill would say for those that have everything in place and have a medical director and have the funds to go to the paramedic, the bill would allow them that opportunity. And there was, I will tell you, there were two entities that were there that were testifying that they did have the funding available, that they did have medical direction support, and that they did have the opportunity to have people coming in from outside their district to perform at the paramedic level. However, my suggestion is that was two entities out of the state, and I think that there's only a few that are actually that well prepared, and most other entities it would be certainly very difficult to attempt to get to the higher level the way the bill is currently written.
Okay, thanks, Dana.
Yeah, excellent points. Thank you for bringing those up, Dan and Dana. Larry, anything on Bill 311?
No, other than I'm trying to remember, you know, back in the 80s, 90s, I remember a lot of nurses were allowed to provide advanced level, and I think that was a different time, and certainly nurses are at a different level than what the regulations allow for now. So I'm not sure how well that was coordinated back then. Our service did not use nurses in the pre-hospital ALS mode. So maybe those people that did experience that or had that opportunity back then could really bring that forward to see how well that worked. Because I kind of echo what Dan had said as well, that there's a lot of pieces, and those pieces have to be well coordinated if this were to be in place.
Yeah, and I might also mention aside is that this bill, one of the parameters is based on the population, and as previous bills were, if you looked at the bill from last year where services that are not paramedic level can actually request a waiver or change their operational plan to have an EMR as one of their licensed crew members. The parameter on that, though, was it had to be at communities that they serve of 10,000 population or less. That also is a question is, who came up with that magic number of 10,000? Why is it if a community has 10,000 or less, it's okay to do these optional changes when if you have a community of over 10,000, you can't? You know, we kind of said, well, what happens if you have a population explosion to 10,001? Does that change your eligibility on whether or not you can provide the paramedic service at this level written in the bill? And is it really fair to the community that's right next door to you that has a population of 11,000? So the community with 11,000 people can't take advantage of this bill, but the community of 10,000 or less can take advantage of this bill. So we kind of brought that discrepancy up as well, stating we never really understood why population was a factor in how these bills are addressed. So just an aside.
Okay, all excellent points, Dana. Thank you very much. That was Assembly Bill 311. Obviously, deserves a little bit more discussion, and I'm sure we'll have more discussions around this. I wanted to point out that we're 30 minutes into the program. We're probably going to go a little bit long today. We did want to also cover Assembly Bill 356, but I'd like to sneak in a quick commercial break. I want to mention, too, that if you are listening on the phone and you'd like to ask a question of Dana or anyone here on the program, feel free to press number 1 on your keypad. If you want to send a question via email, our email is emslive@paw, which is paaw.us. We'll return right after this brief message. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin.
I'm Dr. Alex Summers, an EMS Medical Director and CEO of Astia Health, and I'm excited to introduce you to the next frontier of healthcare delivery solutions. At Astia Health, we are leading the way in utilizing cutting-edge technology to provide the missing link between community paramedicine providers and higher levels of care. Our innovative solution combines our proprietary software with our custom-built access to care telemedicine cases. These cases facilitate a comprehensive virtual examination, allowing a hospital-grade evaluation to be performed in the field. I look forward to helping you incorporate this solution into your business. Astia Health, access to quality healthcare anytime, anywhere. Look us up on the web at astiahealth.com or call us toll-free at 888-885-4434.
You're listening to EMS Live in Wisconsin. And now back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Larry Knuth and Dan Williams. Our guest today is Dana Seckler. Before we move on to Assembly Bill 356, we did have a question from one of our listeners in the audience. If you're calling from area code 608, go ahead with your question. Welcome to the program. So if you press number 1 on your keypad, you're calling from area code 608, go ahead with your question. I've got you live on the program. Okay, let's move on then to Assembly Bill 356. Dana, that one relates to licensure or certification renewal for certain emergency medical service personnel and ambulance service providers. What are the details with that one?
Yeah, so this one actually started out in the governor's budget, which I did not realize. The governor had actually placed in here, in his budget proposal, that EMS relicensure would occur every 4 years. I'm not sure most of us even knew that. In fact, as I stated, I just learned that last week. I had no idea that that was part of his budget proposal. Anyways, the people that are at the state level that review the budget and the such, they go through and then they start saying, well, this is good for here, but it's not good for here. And whoever those reviewers are of the budget basically determine that EMS renewals should not really be part of the governor's budget. So that was, deleted from there. That said, the author of this bill thought that it was an interesting idea. It did reflect some of the comments that were made during the legislative study committee sessions, in which people were saying it was a hardship to renew their licensing every 2 years, and they thought it might be a good idea to consider, 3 or 4 years. So he has written this. Since it was in the governor's budget of 4 years, he rewrote the bill to be a 3-year license period. So here's the comments on that. Some in talking with the people from PAW, the people that we represent, and talking with those out in the field, it was really a split decision. Some people really liked the idea. They're like, well, why not? They looked at other healthcare professional areas and said, these other groups of healthcare professionals renew once every 3, 4, or 5 years. In fact, some groups don't even do continuing education. They pay a license renewal fee once every 3, 4, or 5 years, and then they get their license back. And they thought that maybe we should start going down that road. Others felt a little bit more hesitant about that. Some were saying there'll be a little bit of confusion associated with this, because if you have a state license that's 3 years and you're also nationally registered at 2 years, you're going to have to keep track of both sets and when you have to renew for the one and the other, and which classes that you take for this can apply to that one. But if it's not within the right time frame, they just express a concern it might get a little confusing trying to keep up both national registry and state licensing if they had odd time frames for renewals. The other item that we testified on, that we kind of planted the seed, was that I wasn't so sure that the hardship was in maintaining the license. And I don't, some people might say, well, the hours might be more than they would like to do within a given time period. But net, at the end of the day, we still have the rules that you have to have so much continuing education to maintain whichever license level you're at. My thought was, and from what I heard from the testimony in the Ledge Council, was it was actually more of a hardship to regain a lapsed license once you let it go. So let's use, for example, in 2016, we had a new renewal process. You had to have all your stuff in before by June 30th, 2016, and then you received a license for 2 years. If you didn't renew for whatever reason or take your continuing education or whatever it was, you basically had a 6-month reprieve. At the end of 6 months, you could actually pay a fine or a fee, and then you would be reinstated. Between 6 months and 2 years after that deadline, the rule is that you have to take a refresher class, and then you have to take the national practical and written, pay a fee, and if you pass all that, you then will be reinstated at your license level. And then anything after 2 years, it's null and void. You would actually have to go back and retake the entire class for whichever level you wanted to be at. And I guess that was my thought on the interpretation, was that many people were saying that could be tweaked. And the suggestion was, why not let a person who has a lapsed license go 3, 4, or even 5 years down the road? They were practicing as an EMS provider for a number of years prior to that. They then had life change in which they let their license lapse. So, let them go 3, 4, or 5 years, take a refresher class, take the national practical and written to prove the competencies, pay a fee, and you can be reinstated at that level, you know, for, you know, for a 2-year license period. So we planted that seed as well as an option to the current bill. There was lots of discussion on it, and I'm not sure that it landed one way or the other. It was just discussed that here's all the options, here's the reasons that this came up, and I think that they're going to be discussing it in more detail over the next week or two within the Health Committee.
Okay, thank you for the points on that, Dana. Dan, I wanted to ask you, too, being a former state Wisconsin EMS chief, I'm sure this conversation or at least a thought came up regarding refreshers. I know probably around the time that you were the chief, there was also the movement over to licensing online, which has helped dramatically in the efficiency. But do you have any thoughts or comments on this?
Thanks, Joe. I guess the only thing I would say is that, you know, it was discussed many, many times, the 2 versus 4 versus 3 versus whatever. And there's great arguments on all sides out there. But I think, you know, the fact that because some of our EMS professionals are not frequent users of their skills, a more frequent evaluation period was decided to be most prudent to make sure that people, when they did need to use their skills, they were all set to go. So I guess that will be, to me, always the grappling point of what's enough, what's too little, how often, all those types of things.
Those are very good points. Larry, I wanted to make sure to ask you, too, about this question, especially at Paratek Ambulance, one of the larger employers in the state for emergency medical practitioners. How would you view this with potentially changing the years as far as refresher, going from 2 to potentially 3? What would that mean to you as an employer?
Well, certainly our staff knows that there is a requirement to maintain their certification, and you know, extending it to 3 years is something that they're desirable in having. From an employer standpoint, I think that being a high-volume system, there's a lot of exposure to calls using their skills, and from that point of view, a high volume, extending it, I think it would be advantageous. I'm not sure, again, I'm not a low volume provider or a volunteer service, whether or not that would be sensible to do that, although I can understand the people's desire in wanting to have it extended.
You almost start moving towards competency-based systems, which I think has merit and kind of goes along with what Dan was just saying, too. You know, you just want to make sure somebody is able to perform the skill or task when required. So are there any other comments at all on any of the bills? I know we covered them in some detail. Dana, we appreciate the detail and sharing the information, too, from what you observed and shared at the public hearing.
Dana, this is Dan. I just have one quick question. All of these bills that are in session now, once they adjourn the session and eventually pass a budget and those types of things, will these have to be reintroduced? Are they dead at the end of the session?
So they're going through right now. If they get out to the assembly floor, they can certainly be voted on. And from there, it would go over to the Senate side. If it does not pass the Senate before the end of the session, yes, you are correct, it's considered a dead bill, and then it has to basically restart the whole process for next year. And I'm glad you brought that up, because even though these are very important bills that we've talked about, and I think they will affect us, you know, down the road, a bill that's out there right now is the Community Paramedicine Bill, or the Community EMS Bill, some know it as the Mobile Integrated Health Bill. It passed the Assembly 99-0. And it's now over on the Senate side in committee. If they bring it out for discussion and vote on it, you know, then its potential will pass this year, and it will actually legally recognize community EMS, mobile integrated health, community paramedic, whichever you're going to call it, as a valid level to operate in Wisconsin. If they don't bring it out, and if it's not brought out, then all the work that was done is null and void, and basically next year we start over again with the whole process.
Yeah, I guess that's the unfortunate part, is that people don't understand. I think that these things get introduced and they just live forever. And I know that in my past experience, and I was wondering if it had changed, that once the session is over, they start all over again, and then you got to go through the same hearings and the whole nine yards again.
That's my understanding, Dan. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow,
okay.
You just hit the reset button, and I didn't realize that. That's a great point, Dan. I appreciate that. That's an excellent point to know that it's you hit the reset button. I wanted to invite this caller in, too, because they did press number one on the keypad, so I know you've got your hand up to ask a question. But if you're calling from 608-260, go ahead if you would like to ask your question. I've got you live on the program.
Yes, I'm wondering on Assembly Bill 311, if an established AMT service currently operating wishes to drop down for a period of time because they don't have an AMT scheduled for that day or lacking the staff, can they drop down to the basic level with two basic EMTs? Or is this only allowing us to go higher?
Well, that's a very interesting question. The way the bill is written is that you have your current staffing, and then you would go up to the level that you're at or that you're wanting to go at for a short period of time, one shift, 1 hour, one day, 1 week, whatever it is, and then drop back down. My answer is it would certainly have to be discussed at the DHS, at the EMS office, and then rule, but it would almost sound like if they're willing to let you go up to a higher level, they would certainly at least have to discuss those same services that want to drop down from their current level. Again, I'm assuming it's due to staffing issues. Is that a correct interpretation?
Yes, the staffing. Okay. They didn't have an EMT on board, but they have two EMTs that are able to go.
Yeah. So I would assume that they will look at the intent of what this rule or what this statute is about, and it is based on the staffing issues to allow entities to be able to flex their staffing at any level. To be clear, it's not written that way in statute, but I would assume that they would at least look at it to see if it would also imply that you could go down for a short time period to go back to your regular level again. Very interesting question, and I may follow up personally with the EMS office to see if they have a thought on that. But that was not discussed at testimony or at the hearings. It was only talked about to going up from where your current level is.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent point. Thank you very much for listening and calling in.
Yeah. And I think people are flexible. We're at a point where what's driving this is the decline of volunteers. And it's not just in EMS. This is not a hit on Wisconsin EMS agencies, fire departments, whatever. It's a reflection of the society today that you don't have as many people involved in the United Way, the Kiwanis Club, the Elks Club, whatever it is. There's just not as many people volunteering in service organization groups like they used to in the past. How are we going to support the volunteer system that has less people volunteering? And that was part of my testimony, is saying we're trying to come up with the positive, creative ways to lengthen or extend how a volunteer service can continue to volunteer and still provide a high-quality level, no matter what level it is. So that's where all these creative bills are coming up with. The idea that this gentleman just suggested about having a current level at the AMT level drop down on occasion, that's probably going to be entertained as well. At some point, and all of it is with the idea of how do we support the current volunteer system so that when people call 911, a licensed professional ambulance crew still shows up to the scene.
Okay, Dana, thank you very much. Excellent conversation today. And, of course, today's conversation is being recorded. It's available for playback if you'd like to share. We'll provide the details on that. Dana, I'd like to thank you for being on the program today and for all your work. You've done a tremendous job these last many years and have been really a key point of contact on legislative activities. I know legislators look to you and respect your opinion on these matters as they come forward in public hearings. And other venues. So thank you on behalf of the association for your work in representing the industry in such a fine way.
Well, thanks, Joe. It's certainly been a pleasure and an honor to represent all the great professional EMS providers that are out there in Wisconsin. Thank you.
Okay, and we welcome you back again on a future program to give us additional updates here as we move forward, and hopefully we'll see some action on these items continue before they time out. So thanks for the points. Dan or Larry, anything else? Dan or Larry, anything else in closing?
No, I think we've had a nice long show today, so hopefully people have found it beneficial.
Yeah.
Yes. Go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
No, I agree with Dan. It was a beneficial meeting, and thanks to Dana. Very informative. Appreciate his input and participation.
Yes, definitely. We had quite a few listeners today. We thank you for being a part of the program and listening to all the details and also the announcement with Stars of Life. I'd like to let you know, too, the next EMS Live in Wisconsin program is Tuesday, August 22, starting at 9 a.m. Our guest is Samantha Hilker regarding PulsePoint. I hadn't heard about this before, but Samantha is going to introduce us to PulsePoint. It's a mobile app that allows citizen bystanders to be alerted to an event in their immediate area, like a CPR event, where they could help assist or save a life. Gold Cross Ambulance announced they incorporated the PulsePoint system in the Fox Valley area here recently, and Samantha has been a point of contact and a go-to person on this. So we'll find out some more information on what PulsePoint is and how it may apply to your area and use some of this technology. EMS Live in Wisconsin is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. Today's program, of course, was recorded and is available for playback at the PAW website, which is paaw.us. This is Joe Cavelli on behalf of Larry Knuth, Dan Williams, and our guest Dana Seckler today. Thank you very much for listening to the program. We'll be back again on August 22. We'll see you then. Have a great day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.